Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, thank you for joining me. It is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage. It is an honor and a privilege to be here, as always, because as I've told you every time I fill in, I think that Michael Savage has proved through the years that he's prescient and that he talks about things that are really relevant in our lives. I mean, really things that are important. I mean, take a look at his border culture's language. And here we are on the borders. And what's so insane about this federal judge coming down and supporting the federal government? What's more insane than that is the federal government going after Arizona, because all Arizona was doing was what? They were simply going to enforce federal law. And then I juxtapose that to a story out of, back east, Staten Island. It was a couple of days ago. You may have heard of it. Was it today? Is today the 29th? Today. Headline says, Mexican officials to patrol Staten Island following latest bias attack. Sixth attack against immigrants since April. And it starts quoting a Mexican consulate employee about how they're concerned, of course, what's going on, and that the police are investigating yet another assault on an Hispanic man as a possible hate crime, and the Mexican government now is getting involved as well. So here you have a foreign government getting involved in our internal affairs, and does the federal government say anything? Not a peep. Not a sound. Nothing. Nada. But hey, when one of the states within our union, which is being overrun by illegals, their social welfare net being trampled, their resources being exhausted by tens of thousands, nay, hundreds of thousands of illegals, and that state decides to merely enforce the federal law that the feds don't, what happens? The feds start squawking, and they squawk nonstop. And they actually take the state, Arizona, to court. And, of course, there's some partisan beak sitting on the bench in her black robe who sides with the government. She, of course, has to do all kinds of gymnastics in order to get to the decision that she gets to. But, nevertheless, she does it like a good lapdog of the federal government. My God, when you sit back for a minute and you have that kind of moment of clarity of thought, do you have those? They're called epiphanies. You sit back and you start to look at this insane situation that exists in our country with an overly oppressive and large federal government trampling on the Constitution again and again, and particularly this bunch of hoodlums in power now in the Senate and in the Congress and in the White House. They have the audacity to actually talk about the Constitution that they trample on daily. Why? Because they're situational when it comes to their ethics. They have no value system other than me, 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 me. And of course, I'm going to assuage my sense of guilt on this perceived poverty of other people by extorting your money and your life energy. I mean, think about this. This is insane. I mean, forget about all the trillions of dollars that they're spending that they don't have. But just when you look at this situation of immigration, it basically says on the face of it, if you take what they say on the face of it, which is we cannot defend our borders, we cannot stop illegals from coming in. Well, they're basically saying we can't stop anyone from invading the country. What's the difference? But this is just a huge political football. I mean, either the people that are running the joint are absolutely incompetent and should really be institutionalized, or they are extremely deceptive and Machiavellian in their approach. As somebody said to me today, well, why do you think the lefties, the liberals particularly, seem to want to have illegals? Well, the answer is quite simple. And it goes beyond just getting the vote. It's because most lefties and liberals think of themselves as world citizens. Not citizens of the United States, but world citizens. And how do you better dilute the fabric of a country and sense of nationalism which exists within middle America than to dilute that with huge numbers of a foreign culture coming into the country? Whereas years before we had the, you know, we had the melting pot, now the lefties are talking about what? The salad bowl. That you have a community of ghettos. Everybody sticks to their own. So you have a ghetto of ghettos in the country. I mean, think about this. This is, and then you have people who are actually elected to office, like Representative Gutierrez, Democrat from Illinois, and Representative having a debate. But Gutierrez particularly, he personifies the left on this topic of immigration. Now, just listen to this cut. Run clip five.
It is a bipartisan support. That doesn't make the law right. I think the decision, the Supreme Court has issued decisions on who is it that has dictates immigration law. Mm-hmm. Our Constitution clearly states who dictates immigration law. And in our Constitution, there's also the Supremacy Clause. It says that the federal government is the one that's going to dictate federal law.
Okay. Now, this guy's a fool. Now, he's either a fool or he says something about a significant percentage of our population. Now, I'll tell you what that is. Now, this guy probably never has referred to the Constitution in his life, because if he had, he couldn't possibly have voted for Obamacare, and he certainly couldn't have voted for the extension of Medicare, the prescription benefit, if indeed he did vote for it, I'm sure. And, of course, if he was in power at the time, if he was in elected office, he would have voted for it. Because that's not constitutional according to our 20-page Constitution. But these people are so devious. They have no hardcore set of values that they adhere to. You know, what really matters about character, as you know, is what you do when no one's looking. But these asses stand there like that. Gutierrez stands there like that and has the temerity to talk about the Constitution when he's been one of the proponents of trampling all over the Constitution. But situationally, it makes sense to him to use that now. And what else does it say? I mean, this is such a bizarre... These are people are illegal. They've come here illegally. They've broken the law. Arizona is merely restating and saying we are going to enforce the federal law. The feds are saying, oh, wait a minute. You know, it's our choice not to enforce that law. And therefore, we're going to take Arizona to court. And some beak in black robes sides with the federal government. I mean, it's a moment of insanity. And to even have this debate that somebody like Gutierrez is not... the fact that somebody is actually legitimizing this man's insanity by debating him, and that there's a press that actually reports on him, says something about our country. In reality, this man should be laughed off the stage, should be ignored and ridiculed in every publication and every radio broadcast and every television newscast in the country. And he should be, you know, drummed out of office, laughed out of office. But he isn't. It's actually dealt with like it is a legitimate debate. And the fact that that goes on tells you that a percentage, a significant percentage of the American population today are morons. I'm sorry to say that, but they're morons. They are ignoramuses of the nth degree. They have no understanding or appreciation of their freedom and how they got that freedom and what these founding documents have to do with their freedom today. It's just unbelievable in my mind that this is going on in front of, I mean, anybody who's sane and looks at this thinks, oh, God, I've got to be on a bad acid drip. This is like a flashback to the 60s or 70s. This cannot be happening. But it is happening. I'm going to tell you about morons. Just a little too, where, you know, it takes forever to get settled in. We're buying some stuff with the wife and I. There's a young guy there who was very helpful at checking us out. And I said, well, how's business? Because, you know, everybody's concerned about a business, and I'm a businessman. and worried about the economy, how things are going. He says, I don't know. He says, I don't care. I said, what do you mean you don't care? Well, it doesn't affect me. Now think about this. What kind of a moronic educational system do we have where this snot nose of, I don't know, 19, 20, 21, 22 could care less how business is doing? He sees no correlation between his job and the success of his employer. But that's a moron. And how do you get there except for these lefties continually preaching somehow that wealth is a matter of luck and not perspiration or inspiration, just luck. And that somehow, that they can redistribute everybody's life energy and it comes down like money from heaven, like manna from heaven. I mean, how bizarre is that? That somebody who's working there, pulling a paycheck, is in front of customers, doesn't understand, and it wasn't as though this guy was sloppy. He gave good service. And it wasn't that he was like mean, like, oh, I don't really care. It wasn't like that at all. He was very personable. It just basically, he didn't care. He genuinely didn't care. It wasn't with any malice. He just didn't care. And he didn't care because he was so ignorant. He was such a product of this society now, this public education system, that he had no idea that there was some correlation between him drawing a paycheck and how well his company was doing. And so I put it to you that there must be a significant percentage of morons in this country, absolute blithering idiots, who don't understand the most fundamental aspects of the freedoms that we have. And that you sit back and you give somebody like this Gutierrez upstage, and then you got a Republican standing there and sitting there and debating him and legitimizing this madman's words. It's insane. I feel better now. I have vented. I feel cleansed. I feel ready to entertain your calls. And my number is 1-800-449-8255. That's 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. We have some lines open and available. It's Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
What we need to do, and I hope what the president does, is he calls Republicans and Democrats together and says, what do we need to do to secure that border? What haven't we done? What do we need to do to make sure that you can't get a job in the United States if you're not authorized to get a job here? What do we need to do to go after employers that hire them? How is it that we bring about security? And how is it that we make sure that we register the millions of people who are here?
This is nonsense. First of all, you go after the employers for hiring illegals, and then you make sure they don't get a job, the illegals, but they're here in the country, and then you have to register them. I mean, what kind of double talk is that? This is the classic Representative Gutierrez, Democrat of Illinois, from that corrupt state of Illinois. What double talk? I mean, this is what I mean. You sit back and you say, this is insane. The country's on a bad acid trip. All right, to the phone lines. Let's go to John in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
You know, what happened to the concept of states' rights, where states would make their own laws without the interference of the federal government, that states should make their own laws that pertain to a certain state because of their geographic location?
Well, what happened, of course, is that state politicians, over a period of time, realized that they could get funding from the federal government. In other words, another authority would do the nasty thing of taxing, and they got free money, and they sold out their states' rights, like a drug user sells out their free will to a drug pusher. That's what happened. The state politicians sold us out.
Well, and now the federal government is holding the bag here because they're saying if you don't do this, you don't comply with this, you don't get federal money.
Exactly. It's just like the dope pusher. It's a classic, the same thing. The dope pusher, you know, turns somebody on free with the drugs until they're hooked. And then the dope pusher gets his price. You see, it's exactly the same thing. And so you have the federal government going out and busting dope pushers, but they themselves are the biggest pushers of all in our society.
No,
you know, it's don't do as I say, No, don't do as I do as I say. The feds are a classic example of that, as are a lot of, well, generally our politicians are that way. Rascals and scoundrels, they are. Next up we have in San Diego.
Okay, what I want to talk about is about the American people and why you say that the people are morons, but I think a lot of it is that the people are jaded. They're tired. They work hard. They try to put together businesses and make a living, and they see that at every turn the government, somebody gets in the way, and they can't achieve their life's desires and so forth. And they get jaded after a while, and they get bitter, and then when they get bitter, they start to react in a way like they don't really care, like that gentleman that told you what does it matter to him. He's given up. People give up after so long of trying.
And why do you think we give up?
Because we've created a society now that's so complicated, so complex that by the time you pay your taxes, you pay your utilities, you pay all the things that you're wrapped up in, they've got you wrapped up in, you're just existing. You're barely existing.
And well, if you think you've got a problem here, I mean, think about the Europeans or the Canadians and how much that they're taxed. I mean, the middle classes there exist purely and simply to provide taxes for the governing individuals, the politicians in the society, the government.
Yeah, well, it's worse over there. I was in Europe a while back, and the people that were working with us were MOD, which is the defense ministry over there, Ministry of Defense. They would go to work 2 days a week because they knew they were covered. They had their medical and everything covered, and they didn't care if they came to work.
Well, of course, Europe's day of reckoning has arrived. It's started with Greece, and it's going to rapidly go through all of the European countries. Thank you for your call. That opens up a line at 1-800-449-8255. It is my honor and privilege to be filling in for Michael Savage. My name is Peter Weisbach, and you're hearing The Savage Nation.
Savage.
The real issue here is that we need to get control of our borders, and we need to fix our immigration system.
Well, then, Congressman, why don't you do it in Congress?
Yeah, but you know something? There are 102 Democrats. I hope, Steve, you would take a look at our bill. We do border enforcement. We do a security check and make sure that Social Security card. We go after employers. We do all of the things to make sure. And at the same time, we say to the 12 million undocumented,
right,
register with the government. Bring forward your fingerprints.
Right.
We want to know who you are.
That's Representative Gutierrez out of Illinois, a Democrat. By the way, it's Weisbach in for Michael Savage. Thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation. And check out Michael's website, michaelsavage.com, for all the latest and headlines. Great site. Now, Gutierrez, I mean, the talk about the double talk, this was my point, that you sit back and you say, this is just insane, these people talking. He talks about denying them employment, the illegals, and then registering them. What do you want to register them for if they're illegal? What for? And you deny them employment. Oh, probably so they can go on welfare, right? Of course. Why not? No, you can't work, but hey, register and get welfare. Let the American taxpayer, increase their burden and look after you, because, we are the de facto welfare safety net for all of Mexico. That's what the American taxpayers become. Not only are you looking after our supposed poor, which, of course, is another story in terms of how poor, but you're looking after the Mexican people as well. Now, one point before I get back, and what started me going on this was the federal government going after the state of Arizona, which is merely trying to enforce what the federal law says. So they go after Arizona, yet on the other hand, you've got the Mexican consulate yakking about getting involved domestically here because a Hispanic has been beaten up and it's a possible hate crime. And you've got the Mexican government, the consulate, yakking about this, how they're going to help and make sure that the police here are investigating this situation. And there's not a peep out of the federal government with respect to a foreign power getting involved in our internal affairs. I mean, this is just absurd insanity. And that's what got me going on this whole topic of this immigration thing. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. Next, Anthony in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, this is going to blow up in the Reverend Al Sharpton's face for taking sides in this Arizona thing, because out of the 21 attacks in Staten Island this year, I think about 19 of them have been performed by African-Americans trying to roll Mexicans for their money like they're their personal ATM machine, because they're day laborers, they carry a lot of cash. Now, these African-Americans, Arbor Rue is the yellow journalist from the Daily News. He tried to blame the Arizona policy and Sheriff Joe Arpaio and people like Jan Brewer on this thug, how can I get fast money? And the Mexicans are in the neighborhood, and they're like an ATM machine. It's been going on in the Bronx for even longer. And I want to know, where's the Mexican consulate? A 79-year-old woman was raped right in my neighborhood in Westchester Square in the Bronx by an illegal alien. The composite sketch is straight up. It's like 100 guys that gather.
Let me ask you something. Did your local newspaper report it as being the perpetrator being
the rape?
I said, no, when you're reporting, like your newspapers and television stations, did they identify the perpetrator as someone being a Hispanic?
The composite sketches all over the place are, too. Yes. There's composite
But they actually used the word that the suspect was suspected
Hispanic,
to be Hispanic. Okay, good. Because some newspapers, like the Oregonian, for instance, when I was living down in Portland, Oregon, would refuse to identify the race of any perpetrator. They wouldn't say, like, it was an African-American or it was a white. They just didn't do that at all. That was the Oregonian, Portland, Oregon. All right, sir, thanks for your call. Moving right along. Next, we have Patrice in Santa Maria, California. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. Today I came to a very sad conclusion. There was one Senate said today, it's on Fox News, it's inevitable that Social Security age will be raised to the age of 70. The other conclusion I came to is giving amnesty to the illegal immigrants. In my perspective, the amnesty to illegal immigrants is to register them as voters so that the Social Security age will be raised, and the baby boomers are the bulge in the snake. We have always been the people that had the most numbers. Well, now we're of no value to anybody, so they establish a new voter base. So when we get cheated out of our Social Security that we paid into, some of us starting at 14, 15, 16 years old, we won't get it, and we won't have a voice, and we won't have enough votes.
All right, let me listen to your radio. I want to address this, because the hard facts of this Social Security system is you hear these liars talk about a Social Security lockbox, which, of course, envision a box, and you keep writing an IOU. You take money out of this box, and you just put in a paper IOU, whereas you should be saving this money for when the liability comes due, which is when people start to retire. These yahoos, and on both sides of the aisle, by the way, have been using this money and simply writing an IOU. It's like writing an IOU to yourself, because this is really based on income that's current. This is not a vested program where you kind of accrue and save the money and invest the money so that you have sufficient funds to pay. Social Security is like kiting a check. And the liability is huge between Medicare and Social Security. I saw the other day it was $100 trillion. I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge potential liability, an unfunded liability for the country. And this is insanity. So two things. First of all, we're going to have massive amounts of immigration, because it's always dependent on today's workers to pay for those that have retired. Now, whether you like it or not, I'm not against immigration, by the way. I am against illegal immigration, but I am not against immigration as a whole. And quite frankly, this Ponzi scheme that's been set up by the politicians on the Social Security, it requires more and more taxpayers. And what's our birth rate here, about 2.1? It's not enough. It always needs more. And of course, the retirement age for Social Security should go up, because I think when Social Security was put together, they expected most people to be dead by the time that they were actually eligible for Social Security, or maybe live a year or two, and now they're living like 20 years beyond that. So, of course, the retirement age should go up. And not only that, we're going to need it, because we don't have enough people if we continue to retire these people. And the thing that bothers me about unfettered illegal immigration is that immigration should serve the purpose of serving the economy. In other words, you should be bringing in people that can help and serve the economy and help enhance the value of our economy, which unskilled laborers don't, because all they do is simply drive down the cost of labor, of unskilled labor. And so, you know, we need to deal with immigration, but we're not dealing with it now because it's a political football for both political parties. Let's go to, is it Alonzo? Alonzo in Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
You know that peep squeak of Gutierrez is a crook. He did illegal loans with developers here in Chicago. His family has benefited from illegal loans from developers. Your other caller that says, I'm an American of color. I don't listen to rap. I watch Fox News. I consider myself a conservative. They need to deport Gutierrez and all illegal aliens because they suck all the resources out of this country, far more than they put in. It's called checks and balances. If I don't balance my checkbook, I am going to have an overdraft. They're overdrafting American resources. That's all I have to say. And God bless America.
With thugs in other communities in our society. But of course they are a drain. I mean, there's enough studies out there now that these illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, are indeed a drag on the economy, and of course they drive down the cost of labor. You know, I've said this before, and I've heard Pat Buchanan here on the Savage Show with Michael. You know, when Bush came up with this insane idea of importing, you know, you kind of advertise, and if you can't get workers, then you could start importing them from South America, from third world countries. And I thought, you can't arrest my case that they're both insane on this issue. But Buchanan made the point of, here's a car wash, an established car wash that's paying, I don't know, $13 an hour, has benefits, medical benefits. And a block down the road, somebody wants to open up another car wash. They decide to advertise for $7 an hour. Can't get anybody. And so they start importing under the Bush plan third world unskilled workers, and pretty soon, after a year and a half, 2 years, the original car wash is undercut so badly it goes out of business. And so all of these people now will end up on social welfare, and the new car wash, or unemployment and social welfare possibly, a drag on the economy, and the new car wash isn't offering any kinds of benefits, and so, of course, those workers start going and become a drag on the emergency rooms of the country. And I thought Buchanan had really captured succinctly and beautifully what an insane attempt at policy that was by Bush and the Republicans. Just as I can't forgive them for extending the Medicare program into the prescription benefit program. And I'm telling you, the dynamics for what we face now, and Savage warned you about this year after year, and he was the first guy that was out there hammering the Republicans for being such lefties while they were in power. While as the other big-name talk show host, they had their epiphany, what was it, about 2 weeks after the election when the Republicans were booted out, and they acted as though they had always, oh, yeah, the Republicans were responsible for this. But the whole time while it was going on, Savage was the only one out there ridiculing the Republicans for what they were doing, while the other ones were butt-kissing the Republican Party the whole way through, and only had their epiphany after the Republicans got booted out and were rejected. Now, the Republicans have set up the dynamics for what we face today, and it ain't a pretty picture. It's not a pretty picture. You know, I just hope to God that come November, that this pack of thieves that we have in Congress are collectively booted out, that their asses are booted out of office. This is just outrageous what they're doing. You know, they have no mandate to constitutionally change the country. They couldn't do it if they tried to get a constitutional amendment to change it, and they're doing it with the back door, and they're trampling all over the Constitution in their attempt to make this like a democratic socialist republic, similar to what happens over in Europe. It's unconscionable what's happening. All right, break time, and then back with your calls. 800-449-8255. It's Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is an honor and a privilege to be here as we kick around some of the insanities that we observe from day to day as perpetrated by our illustrious leadership, the politicians in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you read National Review online, but from this corner, Andy McCarthy writes about the Arizona immigration decision by the federal court where parts of the law were stayed and set aside, a temporary injunction. And he says that, in essence, he says Judge Susan Bolton bought the Justice Department's preemption argument. For example, the claim that the federal government has broad and exclusive authority to regulate immigration, and therefore that any state measure that is inconsistent with federal law is invalid. The Arizona law, he points out, this is McCarthy pointing out, the Arizona law is completely consistent with federal law. The judge, however, twisted the concept of federal law into federal enforcement practices, and in effect, the court is saying that if the feds refuse to enforce the law, the states can't do it either, because doing so would transgress the federal policy of non-enforcement. And as McCarthy points out very eloquently, and I quote, which is nuts. And he's right. Let's get to your phone calls. Next up, we have Russell in Mississippi. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, man, how's it going, man? Thank you for my call. Real quick, you hit the nail right on the head with that insanity thing, man. This is ridiculous. Listen, I was wondering if I can ask for your take on, you know, there can't be another country on this blue planet that we live in, like Finland, even friend or foe, Finland, Holland, Russia, North Korea, China, that would let in mass people just come across their borders into their country. Do we need to take lessons from them or what?
Well, I think, I mean, I do think that don't the Germans have problems? They get a lot of people coming in from Africa illegally. I think they too have a problem with that. But certainly not to the degree that we have. And we have millions and millions of them coming across. And it's done, by the way, with the tacit approval of both parties. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. You notice the thing never gets changed, despite the fact year after year after year, you will see that there is polling that says the American people want something done about this. It's like 70-75%. But, you know, the neat twist always is that they don't separate in the argument the people that are for this kind of illegal immigration, legal immigration and illegal immigration. Have you noticed that? They always throw everything together. They are two very distinct situations. One is legal. The other is illegal. You know, it's kind of like saying that the wage earner is the same as the robber, and you throw them all in together when you're talking about them. Well, you don't, because they're very clearly two different people doing two different things. Anthony, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Peter?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
A recent speech by President Obama when he said that building walls or fences is un-American. You know, I think he got it all confused. He's talking about, like, the Warsaw Ghetto, the Berlin Wall. Those are walls of oppression. We just can't contain. You know what's oppressed? Our health, education, and welfare systems. And that's about it, Pete. I just wanted
to... First of all, of course we are a country of fences, because we believe and have entrenched in our Constitution private property rights. Therefore, even though you don't have a physical fence, we have fences around our property. So, and that's one of the great things about our Constitution, that it entrenches property rights. You know, the Constitution of Canada does not entrench property rights. Thank you for your call, sir. William in Kansas City, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I want to talk about the law that says judges cannot be partial the way this Arizona judge did. There's actually a law in the books that goes in conformity with the Constitution that says if you catch a judge being impartial, you can charge him with fraud upon the court, and they have to step down, and their ruling is invalidated. I want to know why the attorneys in Arizona are not using that law.
What law is that? I'm not familiar with it.
It's a 26 United States Code 455.
And it says what?
And it says if a judge rules impartially or behaves impartially toward one or the other parties in a trial, that party can call the judge on it, accuse him of partiality, which is a federal crime, and the judge is obligated immediately without a trial or hearing or paperwork to step down and his decision is nullified and another judge has to.
Okay, okay, hold on a second. So, so are you using the word impartial, I-M-P-A-R-T-I-A-L, impartial?
If the judge is not impartial.
Oh, not. Okay, okay, okay. I missed the not before the impartial. Now, are you a lawyer?
No, I'm not. I just have to be about the only person that seems to be reading the law nowadays.
Do you read? I mean, you can't read possibly all the federal laws. I mean, that's even impossible for a lawyer. That's why they've become so specialized.
Right, but everybody's got to know that the Constitution says that the only thing that judges can do is things that comport with the Constitution.
I know, I know.
So there's law there to protect that right to, for the people.
But it's been watered down, hasn't it? Nobody pays attention to that. I mean, you get these guys like Gutierrez, the Democrat from Illinois. They just use the Constitution when it suits them.
It's that it's watered down. I think that fellow lawyers won't throw their own under the bus to win their case.
No. Sir, thanks for your call. You know, the caller makes a good point. When you think about it, if I had to do it again, I think I'd become a lawyer. Because the lawyers, they do what? They write the laws. They adjudicate the laws. They argue the laws. They're either prosecuting the laws or defending the laws. They have rigged the rules to suit themselves and their profession. All right, this is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage. Don't forget to check out his website, michaelsavage.com, for all the latest headlines. And it's been my honor and privilege to fill in for him on The Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What has been the rose and what has been the thorn?
Well, in the last month, the rose has to be a couple of days we took in Maine with Michelle and Sasha and Malia. And we went on bike rides and hikes.
The thorn.
Well, where do I begin here? No, look, obviously, the country's gone through a tough stretch since I took office.
Oh, I was going to cling to the rest of that since I took office. That's a cute bit of editing. But true, nevertheless, he's exacerbated the problems of President Obama. My name is Peter Weisbach, if you've just joined us, and it's my honor and privilege to be filling in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. And as I was listening to that soundbite, I couldn't help but speculate as to why... Not why, what type of people sit there during the daytime watching The View? Retired folks, yeah. People that working, most not, that are working daytime certainly don't have time to do that. Maybe they're recording it, delayed broadcasting it for themselves. But who? The poor, I'm sure, the people on welfare, right? But do we really have poor in this country? Because you know that the whole poverty level, that poverty line, which is artificial, you can never beat it because it moves. It's relative to the rest of the economy. And so it continually moves, and you can't get rid of, by that definition, poverty. But Walter Williams, one of our great economists, along with Thomas Sowell and others, but Walter Williams, I like Walter Williams a lot. And he doesn't pull any punches. And he wrote a piece recently titled, Where Best to Be Poor. And he explains why poverty in the U.S. doesn't mean its own definition. He says, imagine you are an unborn spirit whom God has condemned to a life of poverty, but has permitted to choose the nation to which to live. Now, I'm betting that most any such condemned unborn spirit would choose the United States. Why? What has historically been defined as poverty, nationally or internationally, no longer exists in the U.S. Let's look at it. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the 2009 poverty line was $22,000 for an urban four-person family. In 2009, having income less than that, 15% or 40 million Americans were classified as poor. Got that in 2009. By that definition, 40,000 or 40 million were considered to be poor. He says, but there's something unique about those poor people not seen anywhere else in the world. Robert Rector, a researcher at the Heritage Foundation, presents data collected from several government sources in a report titled, How Poor Are America's Poor? Examining the Plague of Poverty in America. Get this now. This is our poor. 43% of all poor households actually own their own home. The average home owned by persons classified as poor by the Census Bureau is a three-bedroom house with 1.5 baths, a garage, and a porch or patio. Now, are you sitting down for this? Particularly those of you just coming home maybe from a hard day's work, paying those taxes, making sure that the poor in this country aren't poor. 80% of poor households have air conditioning. By contrast, in 1970, only 36% of the entire U.S. population enjoyed air conditioning. And only 6% of poor households are overcrowded. Two-thirds have more than two rooms per person. And the typical poor American has more living space than the average individual living in Paris, London, Vienna, Athens, and other cities throughout Europe. Nearly three-quarters of poor households own a car. 31% own two or more cars. 97% of poor households have a color television. Over half own two or more televisions. 78% have a VCR or DVD player. 62% have cable or satellite TV reception. 89% own microwave ovens. And more than half have a stereo. And more than a third have an automatic dishwasher. Now, what's defined as poverty, Williams says, is misleading in another way. Official poverty measures count just families' cash income. It ignores additional sources of support, such as earned income tax credit, which is a cash rebate to low-income workers. It ignores Medicaid, housing allowances, food stamps, and other federal and local government subsidies to the poor. And so it goes. He makes a compelling case. It's called Where Best to Be Poor by Walter E. Williams. And you sit there and you watch this nonsense where we have these people constantly referring to the poor in this country. My God, I think a third of the population in the world would love to be as poor as our poor. Now, the other reason I bring up this is because constantly we have this expansion of the welfare state under the guise of we've got to help the less fortunate. We've got to help the less fortunate. To the point that we're now so insane that we have a structural $1.5 trillion deficit, and that we're literally spending ourselves into bankruptcy. It is an appalling ride that we are on, and quite frankly, it's scary to be on this kind of a ride. But here's what's going to happen. One thing about the American society historically, in the quintiles, in terms of, you know, the super rich, the very poor in our society, the one thing about our society has been the mobility. That like a two-thirds or 80% may have spent some time in the lower 20%. But we're very fluid. People go from being poor up to the middle class, up to the rich. The rich, some of them lose their money and end up in the middle class or even poor. We've been very mobile economically, our society has been in the past. Now, I'll tell you, where we are going today, I have lived that when I lived in Canada. I moved down here in 1989. I'm now a knockoff American, a nationalized American, and proud to be such. But I've lived there in this kind of socialistic mindset that is taking root here in this country now, in Canada. And what happens when you get to this situation is the middle class not only contracts, which is happening in this country, it contracts, but you become frozen in your strata. You can't accumulate capital anymore. The middle class simply becomes nothing but taxpayers to run this behemoth of a government which is ever expanding and taking more and more of your life energy all the time. That's where we're heading. That's the road that we're pointed down. That's the road that we're going, that all the middle class becomes is just simply a source of taxes for these social engineers to extort more and more of your life energy in order for them to redistribute this wealth to other people and to gain votes when it comes around to an election. This is the road that we're on. It is absurd to have this kind of a deficit. It is absurd for to call somebody poor by the definition of the things I've told you about today that Walter Williams points out, the director of the Heritage Foundation, has put together. It's sheer insanity to sit down there with a straight face and call these people poor. People who own their own home, people who have air conditioning, people who have dishwashers, people who have microwaves, people who have color TVs, people who have more than one color TV, how can one possibly say that they're poor? And then to only count cash, but not any of the assistance, I mean, how much is Medicaid worth? How much is your medical insurance worth? $1,000 a month for a family, at least? But doesn't count? Food stamps don't count? Earned income tax credit don't count? You see, it is a poverty industry, an industry of poverty pimps that is self-perpetuating and will never, ever, no matter how rich we are as a country, ever be resolved, because it's set up and it's stacked in such a way as to always have poor to keep the poverty pimps like Jesse Jackson and others in our government, bureaucrats employed, politicians making hay and getting reelected, redistributing somebody else's life energy. I mean, when you sit back for a moment and just really start to sit back and say, gee, this is really distorted and insane. How can anybody in his right mind call these people poor? Is it because they don't own two cars or three cars? That they don't have three rooms? They only have two rooms per person on average? They don't have three rooms per person or four rooms per person? You see, this is never ending. And what this bunch of bandits that are now in control of our Congress and White House are really up to is to make us perpetual slaves to the state, and those of us that still have a work ethic to go out there and perpetually be extorted of our life energy in order to pay for their grandiose schemes and to pay off their buddies. How do we get there, and how do we extricate ourselves? Will this November extricate us? And even if this bunch of bandits are thrown out, are we just going to elect a new bunch of bandits that talk a good line when they're in an election campaign, but once they're given all the levers of power, they become just like Democrat lights? Huh? Well, I'm going to wait for your comments. I've got one line open at 1-800-449-8255, and I would like to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Let me do some housekeeping. Remember to check out Michael's website. It's michaelsavage.com. There's some great stories there, a collection of great stories, and you'll see really what's going on in the country. So it's michaelsavage.com, and of course it is my honor and privilege to be sitting in for Michael Savage. It is Peter Weisbach on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Going to Chelsea Clinton's wedding?
I am not going, and I have to say it would be tough enough having one president at a wedding. You don't want two presidents at a wedding.
The
Secret Service and everybody's getting magged as they're going in, and all the gifts are getting unwrapped and ripped up.
Were you invited to Chelsea Clinton's wedding?
I was not invited.
Bill Clinton's ego, I don't think, would take that. Do you, they will? To have another president sitting in the same room as him? I don't think so. So that's quite understandable. I understand that. By the way, it's Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here. But, talking about the Chelsea Clinton wedding, what's the cake going to be? $11,000. It's going to cost $11,000. Now, maybe when we talk about the poor, as Walter Williams so eloquently does, and you should probably, Bing it or Google it. Yeah, I live in the Seattle area, so, I use Bing. But where best to be poor is a piece written by Walter Williams, the economist. And he points out the fact that if you're going to be poor, the best place to be poor is in the United States of America. Yet we hear this continual drumbeat of how the poor are so disadvantaged. Now, can they afford an $11,000 wedding cake like Chelsea Clinton? No, they can't, and maybe they should. Maybe this is about an egalitarian society and not necessarily about poverty at all, because the way the poverty line is determined in this country, it's a lose-lose situation. You can't win that situation. You'll never eliminate poverty the way it is set up now, the way they determine poverty. And, of course, that's because there are so many poverty pimps in the country. Let's go to Aaron in San Diego. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on. I've just got to say, I flat do not believe some of the numbers that I'm hearing. People that make $22,000 a year that have families of four or even just a family of two.
Is that you, sir? You make $22,000?
No. I've employed several people that make $22,000.
Oh, I see.
In Tampa, in Phoenix, and now in the San Diego area, I don't know any of those people that own a three-bedroom house unless they've inherited it and it's a dilapidated old place in the high-crime part of town. But even with all the government programs and helping the world...
So what were you paying your workers, sir? What were you paying your workers? Were you taking advantage of them?
No, not at all. These are guys that either are young guys that are making their way up, in some cases guys that have been behind bars, or in other cases guys that just aren't going to go any further than that.
So how much did you pay them an hour?
Anywhere from $9 to $11 for this particular position, depending on...
Yeah, that's about $22,000, but... So you'll agree that there are young people, some of them, that were going to work themselves out of that. And this, of course, the statistics that Aaron used didn't say that 100% of the people own their own home. It said 43% of all poor households actually own their own home. What's defined to be poor? That doesn't mean that they're poor. That's the whole point of this article and the research.
Okay, I definitely agree that most of the poor in America are probably better off than most of the poor in most of the other countries in the world. But I just...
So
I
what
just,
should we be giving the poor? What do you think as a society that we're responsible for the poor? What do you think we should give them?
I think we should give them enough to give them an opportunity to get out of poverty. Food stamps, I don't disagree with. I think we're a rich enough country that everyone should be able to eat. I think if someone can show that they're doing what they can do, if they have a job, then if they are at a line where they can't afford a roof over their heads, they should get some.
But they do. I mean, all of that stuff is available. If they're making a low amounts of money, there's the earned income tax credit. Food stamps are available. I have not seen a single person in the 20 years I've lived in this country now die of starvation on the streets as they do in say, India. So I think we've accomplished all of that. You know, the point that I'm just trying to make here is I'm sick and tired of hearing, particularly the left in the country, constantly refer to the devastated poor in this country, which is simply not the case.
I'm not saying that I don't think we don't do enough for most of the poor people in America. I think we do. But I just think some of those statistics in that article are just, I don't see how they can be true.
Well, listen, I don't want an emotional response. I want you to then do your own research. I mean, the stuff is available at the heritage.com. Is it heritage.org? Yeah, heritage.org. And look it up yourself. It's Rector who did the research. I mean, when you take a look at, Walter Williams here points out that in 2006, this is according to the annual Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Expenditure Survey, they reported that purchases by the poorest fifth of American households were more than twice as high as the reported incomes. All right, we'll return with your calls in a moment. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
It is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. If you've just joined us, we're kicking around poverty, and really, it's absurd to call our poor in this country. Really, it is. As Walter Williams in this piece has pointed out so eloquently, if you have to be poor, this is the place to be poor, because we really don't have poor. And the one thing that that you've got to understand with this whole measurement of poverty is it doesn't matter how wealthy someone is and how many goodies that they have. You can never eliminate poverty the way that they determine what is poverty, because it's a percentage of average income. So if the average income in the country is $100,000, and then you know people making $44,000, the household of four would be considered to be poor. It's a sliding scale dependent on the average income. Now the numbers I just quoted, don't quote me because I was just making an example. Those aren't exact numbers. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We have in California, Gary. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mr. Weisbeck. How are you?
Yes, sir. I'm fine. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is I'm disabled now, but, you know, 30 years ago I started out as a plumber, and I never got a tax refund, never got any money from the government. Now I'm disabled, and I get $809 from the U.S. government, and with that combined with my wife's income, we're $2,000 a month. We live in a trailer out in the desert. And what I can't believe is how some people want so much more. We're so happy. You know, we have to make ends meet, and we do it. And you know, I worked so hard in my life. Now I'm disabled. How come some people want so much more?
Because they can ask for it, and they can hide behind the patina of a government legitimizing the extortion and theft from other people. It's pretty simple, sir. That's the way it is. But thank you. And you know, I've lived in a trailer. Yes, I have. When I was in my early 20s, it was a nice experience. And I'll tell you something, if I had to, I could do it again. You know, I mean, you don't have to have a palatial surrounding to be happy. And it is no right to these things. I mean, think about how twisted our logic is. Because all this stuff really is just legalized theft of other people's life energy. This whole game of taxation. Beyond the necessities as outlined in our Constitution, the services that the federal government should be providing, all of this stuff of being involved in education, of Social Security, of Medicare, all this kind of stuff, there's no place in the Constitution for that. It was never intended to be that way. And these people never had the honor or the sense of ethics or the honesty to move towards and ask for a constitutional amendment to do the things that they have wanted to do with this country. And they've simply trampled on the Constitution, aided and abetted by a morally corrupt judiciary, by the way, I might add. There's just no way that the founders ever thought that this should be a living, breathing document. If they did that, they would not have had an amending formula. If they figured what some of these lefties are saying again and again, that this is a living, breathing document, then, of course, the founders wouldn't have had an amending formula, because they would have felt that over time, the judiciary would interpret this document differently, as the society at whole would, so that it would be in accordance with the mores of the time or the philosophy of the time. But that's not the case at all. As a matter of fact, they purposely put in an amending formula that was difficult to change, because they had no intent of changing it willy-nilly or to have it as a living, breathing document that some left-leaning, corrupt, intellectually corrupt, and morally corrupt judiciary and lawyers are interpreting in any which way that they want. It's just like this decision out of Arizona by the federal judge and a Clinton appointee has simply bastardized the whole legal thought process coming to that decision. I mean, my God, all Arizona was doing was enforcing the federal law. And what this judge somehow bought into, the Fed argument was, well, look, if there's a law there and we don't enforce it, then nobody else has a right to enforce it. All right, next up. In Chicago, speaking of corrupt, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, For decades I've maintained that with all the good charities out there and the food drives and the food banks, why do we even need a food stamp program with all the charities for somebody to go to if they need something to eat, and collecting, you know, all those food drives, you collect cans of soups for the poor.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it's like anything else. I mean, there's a whole industry of poverty pimps in state governments, local governments, federal government, people outside the government, non-government organizations that, like any other organization, take on a life of their own and are not about to make themselves, when something becomes obsolete. I mean, they're not going to become obsolete. They're inherently, this organization is a living, breathing organization made up of human beings, and their drive is to continue to have a job. And so, therefore, there's no incentive for them to eliminate poverty.
Did I lose you? I'm just wondering, when's the government going to get out of the poverty business?
Well, I think when we kick their collective asses out the door, the politicians. Sir, thank you for your call. Shane in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. Article 1, Section 8 does give Congress power to regulate immigration when it gives Congress the power to deal with naturalization. And I just wanted to point that out and make the other point that preemption is a little bit more complicated than a lot of people are making it seem.
It's not preemption. Sir, Arizona did not pass a new immigration law. They merely said that they were going to enforce the federal immigration law. So I don't understand your argument.
They did pass a new immigration law.
No, they didn't. They just said that they were going to enforce the federal law.
Well, if you say that they passed a law that said we're going to enforce the federal law, which isn't what they did, but taking your argument for what it's worth, there's a type of preemption called field preemption. There's three types. There's conflict preemption. There's field preemption. I just graduated law school. Just studied this.
But that doesn't mean that just because you've come out of some left-leaning university that somehow that you're an authority or that you're a constructionist.
No.
You may be none of those things. But irrespective of that, tell me, why would the federal government not be enforcing its own laws?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I didn't come out of a left-leaning law school, and I was president of several conservative organizations.
I don't care what you were president of. I'm asking you, why is the federal government not enforcing its own laws? Why are they putting this undue burden on the citizens of Arizona to have to carry hundreds of thousands of illegals? Why?
I'm fine with you on the policy matter of the policy point here, but the reasons that the federal government might not enforce immigration laws could be manifold. There could be, one, just the resource issue. Federal government has to work with limited resources, and it has to choose where to put those resources. And you and I might disagree with where they use those resources, but they might decide, because they have the power, because we put them there, to use them in ways that we might not like.
But is it fair, then, for them not to, one of the primary responsibilities of the federal government is to defend the borders. And so they're really kind of stepping back from one of their primary responsibilities under the Constitution, defending the borders. And they are therefore allowing the poor citizens of Arizona to be overrun by hundreds of thousands of illegals and putting an undue burden, tax burden, on the people of Arizona. As a matter of fact, it's almost like taxation without representation, wouldn't you say?
I tend to agree with you, and I think that you just made a great point about the amendment process to the Constitution, that if we have a problem with the way that the federal government is handling immigration, then the way to handle it is to amend the part that delegates that limited power to Congress under Article 1, Section 8, and give that to the states, because this would be a great thing for the states to be able to take care of. And Arizona and Texas and states like that would be able to, put resources there as they would like to. But as it stands, the Constitution just doesn't say that the states have this power. And,
Well, the states have all powers, as you know, that aren't enumerated in the Constitution. And I think isn't it Article 1, Section 8 that you quoted yourself?
Yes, the 10th Amendment says that all powers not reserved to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people.
So where's the federal government anywhere in terms of education in this document here? I'm looking at Section 8, Article 1, Section 8.
I'm with you. They would say that that's interstate commerce. And, that's a wacky interpretation.
Yeah.
I agree with you. But that's beside the point. I mean, immigration is clearly there in Article 1, Section 8. So, and the court said so in 1976 in the Wong Sun case. I mean, it's well established. So,
now, which section are you referring to? Section 8, which article?
Article 1, which is the legislature, and it's Section 8, which is the enumerated powers of Congress.
Well, Section 1 says that's taxation. That's taxation.
No. Article 1, Section 8 has 18 enumerated powers listed out, and among them is to regulate naturalization. And in 1976...
That's Section 4 of Section 8. It's 8.4.
Yeah.
Naturalization and bankruptcies.
4. Article 1, yeah. Section 8, Clause 4. Yes.
All right, Clause 4.
And in 1976, in the Wong Sun case, the Supreme Court interpreted naturalization to include immigration, which I think is fairly common sense. And so I'm not trying to disagree with you on the policy point. I think you're absolutely right that the federal government is failing miserably at immigration, and I don't blame Arizona at all for wanting to do this. But I just think that it's wrong to frame the federal judge as completely making stuff up when, in fact, the Supremacy Clause combined with Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 makes at least an intelligible argument that this is the federal government's prerogative. That's all.
All right. Well, I want to find this piece written by in National Review online, if I can find it, and get your take on that in just a minute. Of course, I can't find it now that I've... What did I do? Here it is. So this is National Review Online, written by Andy McCarthy, and he says that, in essence, he says, Judge Susan Bolton bought the Justice Department's preemption argument, the claim that the federal government has broad and exclusive authority to regulate immigration, and therefore that any state measure that is inconsistent with federal law is invalid. He says the Arizona law is completely consistent with federal law. The judge, however, twisted the concept of federal law into federal enforcement practices. So he's saying that the only way that preemption takes effect, if a state law is inconsistent with the federal law, and he's saying that in the case of Arizona, that's not the case.
Well, that argument is incomplete. There's another type of preemption called field preemption, mm-hmm. where the federal government occupies the field of legislation. An example is insurance. Mm-hmm. And so you're not, or bankruptcy. You're not allowed, states can't regulate bankruptcy because it doesn't make any sense. It has to be done by the federal government. And so now immigration has never been said by the court to be one of these fields that's occupied. So to that extent, I think that Judge Bolton's order is a little bit, you know, out there, but I mm-hmm. still don't think you can say that it's just completely wacky, you know, liberal hijinks. I think that,
all right.
you know, that's
you
all
may, you may have convinced me just a little bit there. Shane, thanks for your call. Well, a good call. Thanks very much. All right, that opens up a line of 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
America, Wells Fargo, Chase Manhattan. We could close them down any day that we decided. But we don't do it because we have mistakenly decided that we are friends with some of them. We are friends with some of them because they gave 50 cents to the church banquet.
My.
We are friends with some of them because they underwrote a scholarship program.
Yes.
This is not ownership. This is not in the opening up capital opportunities.
I think that for Maxine Waters, we should just break up the banks and give all the poor the shares. What do you think? Just expropriate all the shareholders of Bank of America and Citibank and Wells Fargo and just give them to the poor. After all, why shouldn't they have 3 flat screens TVs? Come on now. And why should only, how many of them have air conditioning? Let me see now. Oh, only 80%. Why don't 100% of the poor people have air conditioning? Why? I ask you. All right. Phone calls. Deborah, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage.
Hi. The reason it's about immigration, Houston, as you know, is a sanctuary city. And I feel like it's cost me my job because I've a nurse. I've worked at the hospital for 27 years, and the hospital closed recently.
Why did it close?
Well, it was because of the location. Primarily, they have a lot of self-paid patients that speak Spanish.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, a lot of patients that come, and, you know, they don't have money, no insurance, no nothing. And, you know, the hospital, you know, for years has lost, like, millions of dollars every year. They came to a point, well, you know, a hospital's a business, no matter how you look at it. So, you know, they have to make money. so they eventually, you know, they closed. And it cost a lot of people, you know, a lot of people's out of work.
Okay, so how do you blame that on the illegals? In Kansas City. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. You know, what we have to distinguish between is earned and unearned benefits. And I believe where we have gone wrong is that we still allow people who get unearned benefits to vote more money out of people's pockets. Now, somebody who's on Social Security who's paid in for 50 years is a lot different than somebody getting food stamps or Social Security disability at the age of 30. And I think that's where we've gone wrong. Everybody deserves a vote. And
where we've gone wrong, madam, is to have Social Security in the first place.
I agree with that. But, we have it. But I think that there...
All right, I'm sorry, but you're breaking up. I think that was your phone, not ours. Steve in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
One of the previous callers and how the poverty level has been, you know, everybody's trying to say, like, oh, we should help out all these other countries and, you know, mm-hmm. Why don't we just focus on helping out America? And
how would you help America, sir? How would you have the government help America?
How would I have them help America? I would stop giving to foreign organizations.
You know, it's a pittance. It's only about $18-24 billion out of a... I don't know, what are they spending these days? $4 trillion? God knows. $3.5 trillion, $3.6 trillion? The federal government? It's peanuts. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but still, I mean, and if the government wants to regulate the banks, why don't they regulate some of these donation organizations to other countries? Because I'm sure they're cleaning up shop just as well.
Well, I'll tell you the way the government could help. The way the government could help is to step and get the hell out of the way. By cutting taxes, cutting their own spending, allowing more money in the private sector. This is an insane journey that we've been on, big, big time, because although the private sector employment has contracted some 7% during this very severe recession, what's happened to government employees? Nothing. There has been no contraction of government employees at all, and some of them whine about the fact that they're being furloughed because none of the state governments who are required by law to balance their budget. Of course, they have different machinations, and they kind of twist themselves and pretend that they're actually balancing their budget, and they overstate their revenues, and they play games and all that kind of stuff. But nobody's coming to face-to-face with the reality that the size of government at all levels in this country has to be cut back, or we face what Greece faces, which ultimately people will not buy our treasury bills, will not support this kind of spending by the governments in our country, and we're going to have a severe economic collapse, and it's going to be extremely painful. So I hope that these characters, these rascals and scoundrels that populate the ranks of our politicians, our political ranks, you know, wake up and for once not think of their own collective butts, but think about the country at large and succeeding generations and do what's bloody well right instead of what's right for them, but what's right for the country. It's been my honor and privilege to sit in for Michael Savage. This is Peter Weisbach.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, welcome, and thank you for joining us. It is my honor and privilege to be here. My name is Peter Weisbach, and it's always an honor to sit in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation because, as I've said ad nauseum in the years that I've been filling in for Michael, he really is the one national talk show host that talks about germane issues that really do affect us, and he's been talking about them for a number of years and warned us of the very time we find ourselves in today. I was looking at michaelsavage.com, his website, during the break, and there is the story that the ethics panel has unveiled 13 charges against Representative Rangel, Charles Rangel. What has he been? He's been elected 20 times, I think. 40 years he's been in the House of Representatives. And he kind of represents and personifies the corruption that exists within our political class in this country. And, of course, they get away with more and more because they continue to expand the spending and the scope and the reach of the federal government, which makes all of us work harder as they demand more of our life energy by way of taxes to pay for their folly. But Charles Rangel, I think, really personifies a very corrupt political system that we have allowed as citizens of this country to develop in this country. And so we have this talk, a lot of people, of course, say that we are an empire in decline, that we are in the waning years of our empire. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but over the next 50 to 100 years, we're going to go the way of Rome and slowly deteriorate. And I guess in that particular scenario, Charles Rangel kind of personifies the corruption of the country. And it is corrupt. I mean, you have a bunch of people now. I mean, this founding of this country was based on individual rights, self-governance. It is a wonderful experiment that has gone terribly wrong in the last few decades, certainly 20, 30 years, where people now believe that they have a right by hiding behind the patina of people such as Charles Rangel, and that they can extort other people's money, and that somehow that everybody should be living in an egalitarian society where the poor should have the same as the rich and the rich are too rich and all that kind of stuff. It is the politics of envy. Been there, done that. You see it. This politics of envy, which really was started by Bill Clinton in this country, has existed for years in these socialist countries such as Canada and the European socialist countries such as Great Britain and the Scandinavian countries. The politics of envy. It is always pointing the finger at people who have more and somehow whipping up the envy of people who have less and somehow say that those people who have more have it because of sheer luck. Nothing to do with perspiration or inspiration, just luck. And so the battle, so here we have the picture of what is considered to be kind of the corrupt, declining United States. On the other hand, there's a book I'm reading by George Friedman called The Next 100 Years, and he's the founder of Stratfor, which is a private intelligence and forecasting firm. And he posits that the next 100 years are going to be the American century. That in the 21st century, the dominating power once again will be the United States. And a lot of it is based upon the fact that we control the seas around the world. We have the largest navy, and that there is not a single ship that sails in this world that the United States couldn't stop from sailing, and sails basically because the U.S. Navy allows them to sail. And also he talks about the fact that we have such a small per capita, people per square mile, that's it, the population per square mile. It's like a tenth of what it is, say, in India or China or even Europe. I think it's about a quarter what it is in Europe. And so that we have all this room to expand. And he says that the next 100 years belong to the United States. And I'm wondering how that, and now George Friedman is not a wild-eyed liberal. He's far from that. He's a future, and it's a fascinating read, the next 100 years. And I'm about 100 pages into it. So I thought I would throw out for discussion today the declining United States exemplified and personified by Charles Rangel. Play a soundbite.
My lawyers are going to kill me because they say that the best thing in my best interest is not to make any comment. I don't know how to say no comment It's a very difficult thing for me to turn away reporters. I have been saying, would you please wait until the Ethics Committee completes this investigation? It's been awkward for me, and it's been awkward for you. There's very little that I can say. Someone said, why have a press conference if you're not going to answer any questions?
Yeah.
I cannot make any comment that would make any sense at all. Would you please wait until the investigation is over?
So
no,
over.
Saying no comment is very, very difficult for me. That's
all right. Thank you. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Charles. Now, of course, the other question that I would have about that is, why is he not being charged by the federal government instead of an ethics committee? I mean, within the House of Representatives, didn't he report income from rental properties abroad? Very clearly, that appears to be tax evasion. Why isn't he being charged there? Forget about the puny little ethics. What can they do? They can drum him out of the House of Representatives, but shouldn't he be doing some hard time? I mean, you know, Joe Blow out there, average Joe Blow out there in the United States, who'd try to jilt and not pay his or her taxes, I mean, would be, you know, the weight of the government would come down on them, make an example of them, so that everybody else, you know, voluntarily pays their income taxes. So where are we? Is the next 100 years, is the 21st century a continuation of the American century, or are we truly in decline as personified by a corrupt person like Charles Rangel? First up, we have Sharon in Wisconsin. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, I believe that we are in a decline, and when I was reading a history thing, we are in exact same path as Rome. You know, and I believe any politicians guilty of wrongdoing in office should lose their benefits.
So don't you think, though, that there's a chance in this November that finally now that with Obama and the Democrats fully in control and turning the wheel hard to port, that's to the left, by the way, that we have a chance now to right the ship back to the starboard side?
Well, I think we have a chance for that. But, you know, once they get in there, it's like it's the same old thing. And they malinger, they draw things out, they add things onto bills that
should you're saying that the Republicans, if they got it back into power, would just continue the same drift, the same list to the left?
I think so. You know, it's worked so far.
And what's the answer then?
It's worked so far.
So what's the answer? You're saying,
I don't know.
It's impossible. Throw up your hands. We can't do anything about it.
Office voted out, you know, and I think.
Yeah, but if you're going to vote them out, you're going to vote in the Republicans, right?
Well, you could vote in an independent, you know. But
no.
The thing of it is, if they're guilty of wrongdoing, they've actually acquired that money while in office. It is not theirs.
So we should just extort their earnings. Period. We should leave them destitute and on welfare.
Absolutely, and then they would know the meaning of poverty.
Well, you know, but you know, I would like to follow the law. I don't want to have, you know, some emotional basket case making the decision to expropriate somebody's property. You know, we are supposed to be a nation of laws, and we can't just sit here and decide, well, okay, well, now's our chance, and we're just going to bend the rules just this one time because they deserve it. You know, you just can't do that kind of stuff. All right, next up, George in Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
How do you do, sir?
Are you there?
To expropriate somebody's property.
Okay, well, you know, George, the problem is that you're told by the call screener, good afternoon, welcome to the Savage
Nation. Integrity left in this country, and it starts with our leaders. And when you don't hold your leaders to a higher standard, it trickles down to the average citizen. And in my opinion, the biggest problem with the poor and poverty is the people that really need to get help. Yes, they're getting help, but there's so much fraud out there in our system through Social Security, people claiming fraudulent claims, and they're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you an example. I have a relative in another state. He's getting an apartment. He's getting a monthly check. And he's claiming he's bipolar or a manic depressant. Who isn't in this country? I said, if you were living in the slums of India, believe me, you wouldn't be manic depressant. You'd be doing what you could to earn a living, however you could. And when we don't hold our leaders to a higher standard, it trickles down to the people, and they figure, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And that goes clear across.
Well, we can't quite clearly. We can't do everything that our leaders do. Now, when I come back from the break, I'll tell you why. Just another example why people like Charlie Rangel, the rascal that he is, are treated as a totally different class. They are really today's aristocracy, and we've allowed it to happen. It's unbelievable that we in this nation, where the power flows from us, that we temporarily loan that power, delegate that power to the people that we elect to office, that we allow them to set a whole bunch of laws up that favor them as a special upper crust layer in our society that dictate what we can do, but it doesn't necessarily cover them. This is Wiseback, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is Wiseback sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is always an honor and a privilege to do so. All right, let's, one other point that was brought up in the popularity polls, and so close to an election, they probably would have just swept this whole Charlie Rangel thing under the carpet and forgotten about it. But, it's pretty tough to do that when you're this close to an election and when your popularity is, what, 10, 11%? And so, if you've just joined us, we have a question out there. One is, does Charlie Rangel personifies a corrupt America that is descending and leaving its perch as the premier power in the world? Or is it, as George Friedman of Stratfor, the futurist, predicts, that the 21st century, this century, is going to be a continuation of the American century? And that we will continue to be the preeminent power in the country, which is kind of a nice thing to think about, that, you know, that we're going to rectify all of these problems that we're facing at the present time. But he's firmly convinced that that's what's going to happen. And I'm wondering if you can see a glimmer of hope like George Friedman, that we are indeed going to have and continue on the American experiment as the preeminent power and economy in the world. And my number here is 1-800-449-8255. Next up in Sacramento, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Really nice talking to you. I just wanted to say, what would happen to the common man, which I consider myself, if I did what Charlie Rangel has done?
I wanted to share that with you. Of course you would. They'd be coming after you with the Fed. The Feds would be coming after you.
I know, and I'm horrified from what's happening. I've retired recently, and I see what's happening, and it's sickening.
Well, go out and vote. I've made sure that our eldest daughter, Samantha, who is now the age to vote, that she's registered and ready to vote. And, if you're retired, talk to as many people as possible and get them to vote and to vote these rascals out. Sir, thank you for your call. I did want to make one other point. Because, we talk about this being a classless society, and of course it's far from that, because the aristocracy of today are the political class in this country. Now let me ask you this. If you were to do the things that Charles Rangel, the representative from New York, had done, you would probably be, you would be charged, and you'd be facing having to hire a lawyer and pay for that lawyer. And of course you'd pay for that lawyer with after-tax dollars. Money that you had earned that had been taxed, you would be paying your lawyer for that, with that. However, in Charlie Rangel's case, he can use campaign funds, yes, money donated to him, for his legal defense. According to the Washington Examiner here, Timothy Carney writing this, it says most of the campaign cash Charlie Rangel has raised this election cycle has gone to legal fees, according to his campaign finance reports. Now, if we had this so-called egalitarian society that our friends on the left yearn for and are trying to bring forth in this country, this socialist country, then, of course, this should be a benefit for Charlie Rangel that should be taxed. This should be a taxable benefit for Charlie Rangel. And by the way, speaking of benefits, and under Obamacare, if your employer pays for your medical care, your premium on your insurance, that will now be a taxable benefit under Obamacare. And so much for the fact that this Obamacare would not provide any kind of a tax increase whatsoever, according to President Obama, right? Just none at all. And of course, and the duplicity of all of this is, you know, a number of states, I think 20 of them, are actually challenging the right of the federal government to institute Obamacare. And what are the feds arguing? They're arguing that, of course, this is a tax, Obamacare, and therefore it comes within the jurisdiction and the power of the federal government. Right? I mean, they expose themselves right there. They themselves argue that this is indeed a tax, Obamacare. Huh? They're such duplicitous, you know what? What liars. I mean, unbelievable. Barefaced, bald-faced liars. Wise back, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Don't go away.
Savage.
It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. And as we continue our discussions about America, are we truly in decline or, as personified by Charles Rangel, that corrupt, 20-term politician, representative from New York, or are we, as George Friedman, the futurist, says that the next 100 years, yes, the 21st century belongs to the United States? Let's see what Sean in Arizona has to say. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I was commenting, I believe, in the pendulum theory that has swung so far to the left that now it's time to drift back to the center and then to the right. I think the American people have just about had enough of everything that's gone on in politics. Rangel is a prime example, and I think he should be held to a higher standard. I'm in law enforcement. And if I did half the stuff Charlie Rangel would do, they'd strip me of my pension and fire me. And I don't think he should be insulated from a punishment of that nature.
Well, I think that would be very good. I think we should set those things up. Do you think that there is the pendulum is going to swing come this November?
I'm hoping so. I think everyone I talk to, and I come into contact with a variety of people out in the public, have just been fed up with the illusion of what the truth is instead of being told simply what the truth is.
Well, I agree with you. Certainly the people I talk to, but then again, birds of a feather tend to flock together. So we're probably just talking to the choir, I should say, back and forth. I hope two things I hope for. One is that we send a strong message to all these rascals and scoundrels that we call politicians come this November. And secondarily, if the Republicans do regain power, that they actually walk their talk instead of backing off, that they grow some Giuliani's and actually follow through on what they say they're going to do, because God knows we don't have much time. I mean, the CBO, again, has said that this is unsustainable, this level, and the amount of taxation that's going to have to increase and or spending cuts that have to be made are going to get worse as every day goes by, because the cuts or the increases in taxes have to be draconian in order to avert a financial collapse and a financial crisis. And so I hope that the American people, you know, excluding the morons I talked about earlier, come to their senses and realize that we've got to elect a different crowd, and that crowd that's elected has to follow through and cut back the size of government. You know, this is government has never, ever created any wealth. They simply use wealth and consume wealth. They do not create wealth. And if that were the case, the Soviet Union would be the dominant power the past century and again this century, because that's what they believed in, and it don't work. All you get is more corruption. The bigger the government is, the more corruption you have, both amongst the politicians and the bureaucracy that gets out there and starts to administer these plethora of laws and regulations that are layered upon the private sector. And you literally end up strangling the golden goose that lays the eggs. George, you're next in Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much. It's been my opinion that when a man says that he has no comment, he absolutely, positively has something to hide. If I had done something wrong or falsely accused of doing something wrong, and someone of the media were to ask me a question, I would start defending myself immediately. I wouldn't hide behind no comment. And the reason I think that he's saying no comment is because of the fact that he's going to ask for a little bit more time to grease the wheel. And what I mean by that is he doesn't know precisely what he's going to be responsible for or what judgments are going to be held against him. Mm-hmm. So he says no comment because what he might say might incriminate him down the line.
Well, that's true. And let me tell you something, though, having been involved in a case recently, that your lawyer will tell you to have no comment. And for valid reasons. You know, this situation in our, as these lawyers have continued to crank out the laws, and the politicians have wanted to rectify everything by passing yet another law, every perceived real or unreal or perceived injustice with more and more laws. Think back about 20, 30 years. Somebody would be charged with one violation of the law, right? When's the last time you've heard of somebody being charged with one law? When the feds come after you, it's not just one law. They've got a plethora of them, and they're full quiver. 50, 60 charges? Somebody sits there and faces the potential of 300-400 years in the slammer. And they sit back and they think, well, what kind of people are going to be sitting on my jury? And all they can think about is the O.J. Simpson jury or somebody who's on welfare sitting there adjudicating and judging their actions, and they're faced with 30, 40, 50 counts of something. And somebody sits back and says, you know, hell, if they offer me a plea bargain for 3 or 4 years, I'll take it, because what are the chances of being found innocent with this caliber of jury on 30, 40, 50, 60 charges? I mean, that in and of itself shows you the corruption of our society, that we've allowed it to go so far that these prosecutors, in order to make a name for themselves, and not in all cases, but in many cases, won't just throw one charge at people. It'll be 5, 6, 10, 15, 20, 30. Now think about that for a moment. You got the government coming after you with unlimited pockets. I'll tell you, it ain't a pretty picture. Let's go to Bob in Pittsburgh. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, I wanted to make a comment on where I think America is in terms of decline.
Yes.
And what we need to do to get out of it. I think, first of all, I think we are declining, but I think we can turn it. And I think that there's a bunch of things we can do to turn it. One is, I think that we should institute term limits to get rid of a lot of the corruption. And with that, mm-hmm. I think that people in Congress should only make, in terms of a salary, whatever the national average is, and no more. And I also think that, you know, frankly, they should not get benefits. I'm an independent business owner, and I pay for my own, and, you know, they should pay for their own, too. And instead of going to Washington to serve themselves, they should go there to serve.
No, I concur with you. And I think that the other thing, too, is they've got to cut back the size of the bureaucracy, because the more bureaucracy you have, the larger the bureaucracy, the more corrupt your society becomes. I mean, one just has to take a look at the Soviet Union. I want to harken back on that again and again. But they had all kinds of laws, and some people were getting around the laws by greasing people. Other people got on the wrong side of some bureaucrat who then started pulling out law after law and regulation after regulation and sending people off to psychiatric wards or to Siberia. And this is, I know that this is a stark analogy I'm drawing, but there isn't much different here in the sense of when you have so many laws and so many regulations, it leads to corruption. Everybody should know very clearly what the rules are, and we no longer need them. As a matter of fact, you can't find a single lawyer that can advise you on every aspect of the many, many laws that we have. Lawyers themselves now have become so specialized because we have so many bloody laws.
A few more ideas on what I think we ought to do?
Sure.
Well, one is I think we should get rid of government education.
Yes.
Because it's become, not just a cesspool of corruption, but they tend to teach anything but what we used to call the American way. I also think that we should be phasing out all kinds of federal agencies if they don't pass constitutional muster. And in terms of the people who work in those agencies, well, when we get rid of the illegals, I think there'll be plenty of jobs for those people to take. I also think that the government has no business knowing anything about what kind of income you make.
Yes, yes, you're right.
I think we should get rid of the 16th Amendment.
Absolutely, get rid of the income tax.
Yeah, and we should go back to what the founders envisioned, and that was a sales tax, and that in turn will limit the power of the federal government in the fear that people have of the IRS coming to.
The consumption tax that also gets the underground or the underworld market as well. I mean, the thieves and those people end up paying their fair share of taxes as well. You're absolutely right. I concur with you, sir. Thank you for your well thought out comments. Laurie in Ann Arbor, Michigan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, I guess my comment is that what values do we really hold dearly in America anymore? I mean, you know, I guess the thing that gets me is that, the government's crooked, period. And I think we accept it now. It's been so long. I mean, it's Hollywood, mm-hmm. it's culture, it's everybody, mm-hmm. and they get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you keep lowering the bar every time, you lower it one more time and people accept it. I think it's mm-hmm. become so bad that they're finally mm-hmm. waking up and saying, we're not going to take this anymore.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope that these bums are cast out in large numbers come this November. I hope that that happens across the country. I mean, you've got bad situations in California, Ohio, Illinois, and the state governments. These people all deserve to be booted out of their collective butts from office. They're destroying the country single-handedly. And the mainstream media as well. I mean, when you take a look at the Arizona situation, they constantly refer to it as a controversy. How can it be a bloody controversy when 80% of the people support, in public opinion polls, support the Arizona law? How can that be a controversy? Because the elite somehow don't agree with it. You agree with the majority, it becomes controversial. I mean, these people in the media too, and of course they are losing. Their biases are destroying the organs for which they work. People aren't putting up with it. I mean, we have the web; we can communicate with one another. It was certainly started before the web by talk radio, but it has now been continued. Where on the web, people are flocking together and getting news and exchanging ideas and opinions that aren't just constricted by the mainstream media. They're not the only ones that have the loudspeakers of society anymore. And so it's a wonderful experience. And I hope that we can manifest that in November. Not because I'm a Republican. I am not. Not because I want the Republicans elected just because they're Republicans. Because I want these Democrats, these left-leaning socialist robbers, kicked out of office. They are destroying the country. They deserve to be booted out. They have trampled on the Constitution in a worse way than the Republicans ever did when they had their power, although they were far from being saints when they had full control for 6 years. They were cowards, as a matter of fact. They weren't able to pull the trigger. Now, they should take a lesson from the Democrats. The Democrats know how to use power when they have power, and they've demonstrated it again this time around, whereas the Republicans were cowards in the 6 years. And, of course, they elected the wrong guy as the leader of their party in George W. Bush. He was not a conservative. He never was. He made his money through his connections. He was a left-of-center politician, and that's why he got along in Texas with a Democratic legislature. Look, that's the bottom line. I hope this time if the Republicans get back, if they get the levers of power once again, that they're able to pull the trigger and use the power adequately to really cut back the size of government and have a flourishing economy once again. All right, it's time for me to go for a break. 1-800-449-8255. It's my honor and privilege to fill in for Michael Savage. My name is Weisbach, and you are on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you for joining me this today. Much we've talked about in terms of America. Is this the 21st century, another American century, or are we indeed in decline, an irreversible decline, as many, many people think? George Friedman, his book, The Next 100 Years, says no, that this is still the American century, the 21st century. And he makes a very compelling case. And, you know, I mean, I want to believe that this is our century and can continue to be our century, the second American century. And I say that because I'm buoyed. I think that people are awakening and that people are prepared now to get rid of these rascals and scoundrels, these professional politicians that are like leeches on our bodies, literally sucking out our life energy. On frivolous, I mean, they use our life energy in order to buy their positions by, you know, getting people to believe that somehow they can get something for nothing, and that these politicians are the font of gifts that nobody has to pay for. And I ran across this piece. You may have seen stuff like this, which kind of gives you some context in terms of what dollars are. And I think the Congress has just raised the debt limit up to $14 trillion, which, by the way, doesn't cover the unfunded liabilities of Social Security and Medicare, which I just read recently is like $100 trillion. $100 trillion is like six times our annual GDP, gross domestic product. Everything that we produce as a country, everybody in the country produces. It's amazing. Anyway, so what is $1 trillion? A trillion is a one followed by 12 zeros. Huh? And according to our U.S. population is about 310 million. Each person's share of $1 trillion in the national debt is equal to approximately $3,226. This is without regard to the person who's working and earning anything. Now, for $14 trillion, the share is $45,164. And for a family of four, the share is $180,000. And for $19 trillion, for a family of four, it's $245,000. That's probably more than some people's mortgage. Rudy in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I got a bone to pick.
Mm-hmm.
W was not a liberal. He was a good conservative with his hands tied, jumping Jim Jeffers in the Senate, cut his throat. He only had a bare majority.
Oh, it's nonsense. Nonsense. Please stop it. Stop it. He had the veto power. He ran up his last deficit of his last year of governing was $500 billion, a half $1 trillion. He promoted the prescription drug benefit. Of course he was left of center. He was not a conservative. And it was one of the great, great, great deceptions by the mainstream media to jump upon this man and paint him as a right-wing, ultra-right-wing conservative. He was left of center. And what does that make people like Savage or true conservatives? What does it make them? Think about that for a moment. You were duped, and you were duped big time. The mainstream media, it was one of the biggest cons ever perpetrated on the American people to paint George W. Bush as a right-wing ideologue. He was far from that. He governed left of center. And thereby it really marginalized any conservative. Think about it for a moment. God, you bought that hook, line, and sinker. All right, Wayne in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, I have to agree with you on that. He certainly wasn't an ultra-conservative. Not when he created bigger government than what we had before with Clinton.
Yep.
With the airport security and all that, I would agree with you on that. But, you know, you were talking about how the Democrats are just pushing their agenda through. I don't see him pushing any of their agenda through.
Well, you don't think Obamacare is their agenda?
I think the American people have asked for new change. Now, I'm not saying that that's what the American people had wanted with health care, not at all. But I'm not happy with either party personally. because I see both.
No, this is, look, I don't want to get involved in this. I'm not happy with you. Of course I'm not. But the fact of the matter is that the Republicans, if they walk their talk, will they act, if they get the power again, will they in fact wield power the way the Democrats? Of course the Democrats have wielded power. My God, look what they managed to get through. They got the financial package, a reform package through. They've got their Obamacare through. They're going to lapse these tax cuts. Come on, of course they've done a wonderful job of getting through their agenda. Well, that's all the time that I have. My thanks to Michael Savage for the opportunity and honor to fill in for him. This is Peter Weisbach, and you've heard The Savage Nation.
Savage.